Hey guys, really excited to bring you this latest Tom Talk. This is actually a real dream come true for me, and I'm sure you'll be able to see me trying to contain my happiness and excitement. I've always been a huge, huge fan of DJ Premier from the legendary Gangstar, and he was kind enough to join me for this one. I had all notes of questions, everything I wanted to ask. It was a total nerd out fest for me, and I loved it. And I thank him for doing it. I hope you enjoy my talk with the legendary DJ Premier.
This shit is big time!
Who is Randy?
Don't bring anyone loving to this.
Your mom in the fucking sand!
Primo, thank you so much. This is a huge honor. I don't even know where to begin. Let's begin, I guess, with just saying thank you and welcome. And where you're right now, are you in New York right now?
Yeah, I'm in my studio, my recording studio here in New York.
Is the governor going to shut that down, or are you allowed to leave if you want?
I mean, even when the day that it hit and everything was shut down, we were just sneaking in our lab and just working. And, you know, when you're in the lab cooking music and stuff, you're pretty much hit almost 24 hours a day.
Yeah, I bet.
Just not moving around. And thank goodness we have a restaurant that's upstairs.
Nice.
An Italian restaurant. And they were making this food every day. So, you know, it was beautiful.
So you're still grinding out there you're just in the studio making music all the time.
All the time.
And throughout quarantine. Because when we were texting, you said you were working on multiple albums and stuff. You're on it, man.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's an addiction, you know. Everybody got. Some people use drugs, pills, coke.
Yeah,
I use music as my addiction. It's like if I'm not in the studio making something, it feels weird to be home.
Yeah, that was one of the worst parts of this whole year as a comedian was that's my addiction, right? And there's been this long period where they're like, well, you just can't do it.
Like the drive through thing y'all did was dope.
The drive through was fun, but that's pretty like. It's really a thing to put one of those together. You know, we're so used to
we take
it for granted, but like you could just go to a club, get on stage and you're doing it, you know? So that shit.
It was a good alternative though. And in the circumstance, that's the problem with most people. They don't know how to find a way. And it's like, there's always a way to find a way.
Yes. You're right about that. There's always a way. And now I'm doing like, I don't know, I'm traveling to the places that allow it, you know? So I did Huntsville, Alabama last week just to, do wow. Six shows. I mean, just to get on stage, man. But there's so much I want to ask you, and I apologize in advance if you're like, man, I've heard that question a million times. I just got to hear it myself, so I apologize.
Yeah, but it's coming from you, so the fact that I'm a fan of your comedy and your podcast and everything, your wife is funny, Christina, shout to her. Your mom is hilarious.
Thanks.
When y'all speak Spanish.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like I didn't even know you spoke Spanish. I didn't even know your mother was Latina, you know what I'm saying? Like. Like even on a Ball Hog, when you talked about how your mom is festive for Christmas and you asking about all her pets dying and how she, you know, what are you gonna do when they die? She's like, I hope we all die at the same time.
That's true.
Pops love watching black people on the carnival boat. I love it.
Thanks, man. Well, those are all truth stories, and she's a wild one, man. My mom is something else. She is something else. Yeah. I want to ask about for a second, because you know, for me, whatever circumstance and however it happened, I fell in love with hip hop at a young age, you know, and it was I remember the late '80s. Early 90s being, you know, I was born in 79, so that's kind of a pivotal time when you start identifying with a music, you know, like you're 9, 10, 11. It's like that's when you get some money to go buy a tape or whatever you like. And and hip hop really was something that, you know, I just took to, and it's been a love ever since. And I'm completely, you know, you go through my phone and if you go through my old CD binders and stuff, it's all hip hop, you know? But what's funny to me was like, one of the things is I've always at that age, at least, associated you and Gangstar with New York, right? Like that's I think most people that listen and maybe don't know yet, they're like, oh, those guys are New York guys, New York sound. But I find it, you know, interesting that your origins are Texas. And I just wanted to know, like, do you feel like Texas had an influence on you and as an artist?
Oh, in a major way, because I always say that even with hip hop, like how I'm 54 and still bang out the boom bap style, mm-hmm. you know, what they call it is shout to KRS-One. That style, I don't never want to abandon because it's reminiscent of how it sounded when I was being raised on it. You know, in my era, I'm 13 years older than you.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I was born in 66. You said 79, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So with that said, I got to see it develop from the very beginning, even though it was in New York, because my grandfather lived in New York and my mother was from Baltimore. So every summer we would always stay at my mom's house to visit her family. We would drive to North Carolina and South Carolina to see my dad's family in Raleigh and some to South Carolina. And then we go to New York as this final stop every summer. So for me as a kid, it was like, wow, man, they're stealing bikes. They're stealing the tires from the bikes.
Yeah.
I want to steal a bike, you know, like as a kid, it's like fun shit.
Sure.
So to be used to it all the way up until my teens, once you get to your teenage years, you're like, well, I don't really want to go with my parents anymore. I just want to hang with my grandfather because he was a baseball fanatic, loved the Yankees, and I used to go see the Yankees with him. And I'm into sports as well. So we always just caught games. And, you know, again, I'm the only boy in my family. I have all sisters, which we're extremely tight. And they're also sports buffs, know their shit. My mother knew her shit. God bless her. I buried her in June. Everybody played sports and no sports. So with that, as I got around 13, I was like, can I go to New York without y'all? And, you know, because it's always where I got to be chaperoned by y'all. And now I'm at an age where I want to kind of, you know, move around on my own. And I had made so many friends from coming every summer. And some of my friends there, their relatives lived in the same block as us in Texas, coincidentally. So that was even, shout to Scott Wood. And the whole Wood family, that they would come visit us. So now when I go to New York, I'm hanging with him, and he lived on the west side of the city, and he would show me around because now I can hang with friends and go get into a little mischief here and there. So by the time the hip hop bug got to me, I was like, I only have about a year. I had 18 credits left in college, and I said, you know what? I don't want to graduate and then see if I can get a record deal. And then come back, and if I don't get it, now I got to look for a job. But I let a good year pass by where I graduated with no job or any plan. I didn't have a plan going to New York either. I just knew that my gut kept saying, go now and see if you can get a deal. And if you can't, you come back and finish school. But you came back to that because a lot of people that are from my town, which is called Prairie View, it's right outside of Houston.
Right.
It's like 45 minutes. But the thing is, you used to hear the rumblings of people that graduated and moved on and moved to a different city or whatever to get their thing going. And they didn't make it. And they came back and just worked at the college that I went to, where my father worked. And you always hear the rumblings like, they didn't make it in what they did. And that doesn't mean that that's a bad thing, but I didn't want that rumbling about me. So I said, if I don't make it, let me at least know that if I don't make it, I'm going straight back to school. So I was like, oh, well, I don't know if he graduated or not, but he's in school.
Yeah.
So I said, let's go now. My father was like, you have no plan. What are you going to do? I said, trust me. My gut says it's time to go. I'm going to be all right. I'm going to make it. And I believe that.
And that's amazing in and of itself. When you made that decision, like how confident were you in your skill set? Cause you're pretty young, right? I mean, you're in college, and also the art form, like you're part of it developing. You know, like that's still early on, right? That's early 80s.
87 was when I went to shop my demo, didn't get it. All of them got returned. 88 is when Guru heard my demo.
And
that's how I got into Gangsta.
And then, okay, so he heard your demo. And then, was it an immediate thing?
I was in a different group. We were originally called MCs in Control. Shout to Top Ski. Shout to Sugar Pop and shout to Styly T. That was the crew. And we're still all friends to this day and everything. We still check on each other, make sure everybody's all right. But at the time, we all went to school together. I was one of the DJs there. I got to shout out RP Cola, like the soda, RC Cola.
Yeah.
But his name is Randy Pettis. Is Randy Pettis. Excuse me. So Randy was RP Cola. He could scratch and cut his ass off. And I didn't have a mixer with a crossfade. I had the knobs, which was the early stage of cutting and scratching anyway with mixers. So I used to ask him, he was like my competition with another crew. And I got to shout them out too. One of them passed away, Daryl Tapscott, Tony Tapscott, and Chris Garrett. Me and Chris went to high school together, and Tony and Daryl actually, but they were older. Chris was in my class, but we were the rivals in my town on every party, every gig. It's like, who's getting the gig, me or them? And I also got a shout out Theodore Archer, who was my partner, who also passed away. So when it came down to that, and RP would kind of freelance and just either DJ with me or DJ with Chris. And I was like, man, I got to get that guy to show me how to do all the cutting and everything. He was always cutting up Houdini, 5 minutes of funk. And he had the felt pads. And I was like, man, somebody in Texas knows how to cut like that? Because I'd never seen a DJ do all that. I knew how to blend. Uh-huh. I was real quick with blending and quick mixing. I didn't know how to scratch and cut yet.
When you see that, like when you see people who are skilled do it and, you know, you're seeing that guy do it, how much of a learning process is it? I mean, you obviously already like are inclined, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Cause you're blending and you're doing everything with records. But like when you're learning how to scratch, was it immediate? Or did you like once?
Very immediate. Just out of excitement. Wow. Cause watching him, I'm very good at just taking it all in.
Yeah.
Now I'm better at a crash course. Like I could study for a test and not have studied at all.
Yeah.
Go through it that night and literally pass the whole thing.
Right.
Cause I haven't memorized.
By the way, I want to just point out something that you shouted out a bunch of people. I noticed something about like your Instagram, because I've followed you on Instagram for a long time before we even like were messaging back and forth. Right. And that is that you really, man, like it's definitely, it's part of who you are. You always acknowledge people. Like you're always remembering, like shouting out anniversaries of records, singles, albums. You're always honoring people's birthdays and acknowledging people who have passed away. And like it's funny that it's kind of like it strikes you as you're like, oh, I don't even know anybody who does this. You're the only guy I know.
Right. There's other ones from our cloth. And there's certain ones I'll see and go, oh damn, that's right, today is their birthday, and I'll forget. And
these are all from your memory? No.
Well, a lot of them I put in my calendar.
Oh, okay. I was like, Jesus, man.
Now I put it in my calendar on my phone and it'll alert me that that's that day.
But it's a really, you know? It's a really like nice, kind hearted thing. It's how it strikes me. Like, yeah, you're always, you know, and I think, I mean, part of, you know, someone's probably perspective of like a superstar hip hop producer is not that like he would spend the time to post about all these people, and it's like it's right. Kind of refreshing, man.
Oh damn, that's dope. Yeah, I'm grateful on a different level because New York accepted me when it was not easy to get in. You know, I Willie D and Scarface always talk about their trek to New York when they got booed by the whole
I remember
town.
That they said they did a show and it took
New Music Seminar.
Yeah, and yeah, they said they got booed the hell off, and then it took Mime Playing Tricks on Me.
Yep,
to everybody to, you know.
Yeah, I saw them open up for Ice Cube, was headlining the Apollo, which is not easy to do. But you know, America Most Wanted was popping, and Kool G Rap and Polo opened up, and Ghetto Boys opened up first, and the Apollo does an early show at 7 and another one at 11. The 7's for the kids and mom and daddy and all that. Once they leave, the thugs, the wild, the scariest amount of people fill up the Apollo, and you can feel the energy. You better be on point, but they're there for the music. And I'm telling you, that 11 o'clock show is no joke. And the crazy thing is the 7 o'clock show was dope. And to see everybody singing along with the Ghetto Boys made me feel so good. They were the dressing room I chilled in Even though Ice Cube and I have been friends for years, they were the ones I chilled with backstage because we were homies.
Yeah.
And actually, my MC, Top Ski, used to beatbox for Willie D in battles at this club called the Rhinestone Wrangler, which was our hip-hop club back in the 80s. You know?
Yeah.
So shout out to all them. Rest in peace to Bill, Bushwick Bill. And again, a lot of these people I say rest in peace to were people we were running contact with, and all were from the same 90s era predominantly. So all of us saw each other in the same clubs everywhere on every week.
Was it, by the way, because you know there was like, obviously there's that point where shit got wild for a minute where everything was like East Coast, West Coast, and you know, there was real violence happening and people calling each other out. Like in that era, did you run into problems? Like was that something that, you know, walking into a club, you'd see people that are, you know, whatever, other coast, or was it something that it hit you? Like were people?
Nah, because we were cool with both sides. And honestly, that really truly was a media thing. Like
really?
the violence and everything that went down with the whole East West thing had nothing to do with the music. That had to do with individuals having issues with individuals. So, but even though the music is going to be blended into it wasn't clickbait then, but it's definitely going to be the headline of the paper before digital age. But that's what it is. If you're cool with the East and on the West with everybody, even if they had drama with another artist, we were still, you know, given full passes and love and respect. There was never no, well, you're from that side too, so it counts when you come to our town. You know, I check, you know how they say check in and all that? Some artists have to check in. Our check in's different because, again, we have a relationship where it's just checking on guys. You know, I can call Dre, hey, man, I'm coming to town. And he's, you know, he's like, come on through, man, I'm in the lab. And, you know, I can call Dub C, I can call Q, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And even Cube Security, you know, I can say, yo, I'm in town, and they're thorough dudes.
Yeah.
And they're going to be like, yeah, come on down. I got you.
Well, so, yeah, you're fucking, you know, royalty, man. Like, who's going to be like, no thanks.
appreciate it.
So.
Yeah, but we've had our squabs and our deaths and everything as well.
Of course. Have you ever had studio sessions, like in all your years of doing this, that you're like, oh my, like, because, you know, there's famous stories. And I mean, I remember listening to an interview with Dre one time where he was like, man, dude's coming in talking about how many people they shot and shit. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Which I can feel how that could fuck with your energy if you're trying to like be creative. Right. And someone's like, you know, I shot someone. And you're like, God damn, man. Like, so
honestly,
yeah,
go ahead.
No, I just wonder if that aggression is around you or I don't know, things can, you know, there was a story Rakim told about that he would keep Rottweilers in the cage in the studio, and if somebody got out of pocket, he'd open the cage. I was like, that seems like like an intense working environment.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I like that.
You like
that? Yeah, we've definitely had a studio fights, and all you hear is ba-doom, 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 and all the rumbling, what the fuck's going on in there.
Yeah.
Obviously, we were not 20s then, so.
Sure.
But, you know, we've had the typical fights. We used to be on blocks where it's just drug central, heroin blocks and stuff like that. Just really crazy shit. And certain artists would actually be like, I don't want to come to your studio because I'm not comfortable because of where you're located. You
know? Oh, really?
And I'm like, but you're in hip hop and you're doing street music.
Yeah.
What are you afraid of?
What are you afraid of? But you've had
bring
people...
your goons.
Bring...
Yeah. Bring your goons, because goons respect other goons when there's a certain line of energy that we bring on both sides. It turns out being, we roll dice, we play pool, you know, and talk and just talk shit, barbershop talk.
Yeah.
You know, and talk, and guess who's coming home from jail? Guess who's locked up? And guess who just got 10 years. It becomes normal in our culture because it just is.
Yeah. So
it doesn't even faze you.
When people were scared of neighborhoods, was this like, in the 80s and 90s, or even now, you're saying?
This is like 92, 93, 91. Yeah, a lot of major artists that I...
What part of town would they be scared of? Like Uptown?
In Hell's Kitchen.
Hell's Kitchen, okay.
Yeah, so, which everybody doesn't want to go to hell.
Yeah, sure.
Even though we do devilish things.
Yeah.
But.
so Do you remember when Dwick came out? Is that when you felt? Is that the first time you're like where you're like, oh, we are part of, you know, a big thing happening? Like, is that the song that makes you feel like, you know, it's one thing to get, you know, signed or whatever, and we're making music, but like when you realize that this is playing on everyone's radio and probably coming out of bars and clubs and everything, is that the one that makes you go like, no, this is now you can tell your dad, this is a career. Like, this is, I made it. Is that the one or no?
Before Dwick, I would have to say, Just to Get a Rep.
Oh, Just to Get a Rep. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That did real. That was in 90. The single video came out in 90 because the 12 inch has 1990. The album came out in 91, but Just to Get a Rep did a lot of justice to all the sound systems, because, you know, we're from the car stereo era.
Yeah.
But you had that Pullman system. So we made it for the cars. We didn't even make it for you know, obviously we weren't at the level of computers and earbuds. It's car system. So I still have that same mind state when I make my music. It has to be for a car or big radio.
That's my favorite place to listen to music, especially hip hop, is like to get something, especially like the kind of music you make, to put it on in the car, blast it, and you know, it's head nice. Bobbing, driving music, you know, like that's the best.
That's always the MO. And Dwick was 92,
right?
So that was Daily Operation. Take It Personal was the single. Dwick was the unreleased B side, but being that it took off, we wanted to add it to Daily Operation because that was the era of cassette singles.
Uh-huh.
And they called them cassingles. And a lot of people were buying an album and complaining, going, yo, Dwick's not on here, and I bought your album.
Yeah.
But the cassette singles sold like hotcakes, and then we were supposed to stripe it onto the album, and then at the last minute, the label said, we're just going to move forward and not stripe it onto the album. But I'm like, yeah, you're going to lose sales because everybody's looking for Dwick.
Right.
So a lot of people wondered why it was on Hard to Earn, which came out in 93, 94. Because we wanted to be on one of our albums, so it was like the next one following. We at that time we were doing an album every year, so we put
That's
it
wild.
On there.
All those songs, Daily Operation. Those all of them still slap, man. Like Just to Get a Rep, like you could, if I didn't know, if it wasn't like from reference, that I,
right.
you know, I would be like, yeah, that's a new hot song. That shit still hits hard,
Thank
man.
Yeah, shout out to Greg. It's Greg Nice and Smooth B.
Smooth B, what's up, man?
Rest in peace to Smooth's wife, man. She just passed.
Oh, man.
Keisha, man. Great, great, great woman, man. So love to her as well.
I got to ask you this. So I know you've been asked this before, but I need to ask you this. So when anybody looks at Illmatic and you look at the team that came together to produce it, it's bananas, right? Like you go, and then I heard all this. I always heard stories about people seeing Nas perform, you know, because you're, I mean, you know, guys like you, you're a producer and a DJ, obviously you know, your ears are open to talented MCs, but like, do you recall seeing him for the first time and just being like, what the fuck?
You know, well, at that time when I was like 90, Lars Professor was the one that I used to hang with a lot. And go over to when they were the two DJs from Main Source, their mother ran the label. So we used to go to their place all the time and hang. And Lars Professor showed me so many techniques on programming beats. And then when they were working on the last few songs, he's like, yo, I'm gonna do a posse cut, because that was the new thing after Marley Marl did the symphony. All of a sudden, everybody's getting two or three guys to do a cut together, you know, on their album. And I feel like Marley's really set that off on that scale when he did the symphony. But he said, yo, I'm gonna put these new guys on from Queens. And he said, I got this guy named Akinelli. He said, my man, Joe Fatal, who everybody knows Joe Fatal, you know, in that circle. And then he goes, and he said, this dude called the Rapper Nas. Cause a lot of times back then, Queensbridge artists would put the rapper in front of their name, just like Noid is the rapper Noid from Mobb Deep's crew.
Okay.
And he was the rapper Nas. So the day they cut the record, he said, yo, I want you to hear this and see what you think. And he played me live from the barbecue. So I heard it before it was even on the album.
You did.
Straight out the lab. Yeah, straight from the lab. And when I heard that, I was like, yo, that dude's going to, even Akinelli, I said, he's going to blow as well, because Akinelli had a dope style.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Next thing you knew, everybody was talking about Nas. Everybody.
Everybody. And then
everybody.
96, Reasonable Doubt. How long did you know Jay-Z before? Like, do you know him, like, years before that?
Yeah, I knew Jay probably around 88.
Oh, that far in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And had you seen
the Mars Club? Walking the club Mars with the big chain and everything.
Yeah. Had you heard him? Because everybody talks about how, you know, the no pen to paper thing, how he can just riff off the top of his head. Did you see that early on and go like, this is like a gifted dude?
Yeah. Well, I saw Biggie do it first.
Oh, right.
Biggie, same thing. They just sit there. Biggie just sit there. And I don't want to say waste hours, because whatever it is, the energy is what you're supposed to respect for the artist, as long as they deliver good shit. And he would just sit there drinking Bacardi Limon and Moet and Hennessy and it would just be blunt after blunt after blunt, and girls coming in. And he's always offering you a little bit of that. Like, yo, you want to get with her? It's like, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And her. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like an artist I'd like to meet. Rest in peace, Biggie.
Yeah. And then from there, I'm like, Big, it's good. You know, the session ends in about another 2 hours. He's like, oh, I'm ready. You're like, huh? He's like, yeah, I'm ready. And just goes in the booth and does it. You're like, damn, all this time we've been sitting around here, even though there was things to occupy the time.
Right. Man, that's unbelievable. Well, like that song.
There you go.
So that's like unbelievable comes together like, you know, end of a session kind of thing. Like you're saying, like you've been in there for hours and he's like, oh yeah, I'll just go throw it on real quick.
And the album was already done, because it was the updated version of the album, because Puffy had done a promo when we were at one of the seminars called the Big Mac, because Craig Mack and Biggie is who he signed. So it was like in a Big Mac little container with the burger and the bun and the little green paper that looked like lettuce. And it was a cassette. So that's why it's called the Big Mac. And, you know, so, and you open, it looks like a Big Mac, but there was a cassette instead of the meat, the cassette was in the bun, and it was just snippets of Biggie and Craig's album. Biggie had already given the full versions to all his homies in the hood. But back then in the 90s, we always wanted our team to have a copy so that they could memorize and sing it along with us whenever we are out in the street to show that our shit is hot too. That was the thing.
Oh, really? So you're actually saying like memorize this so that it's like, it almost creates like street marketing in a way, right? You'll know the words. Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so Puff was like, yo, you can't be giving it out to everybody. Now they're gonna, it's gonna be leaked. That was when the leakage thing started to even be a thing. And Big's like, but these are my friends. And we were the same way. I wanted, if it's 30 of us, all 30, I want them to know it at least 2 months in advance. You know what I'm saying? But now you're like, no, I can't give it out until, because now even your own crew will be like, yo, I got the album already. And people are gonna be like, word, you got it. Let me get it, or let me at least hear it. You know, don't tell nobody, but yeah, so it's like a thing. Hip hop still has that much of an anticipation and want, you know.
Did you I'm thinking about like your catalog, it's so insane. I imagine that 92, 93 come along. I mean, you're obviously now associated with the biggest acts. How are people? I just think that you'd be getting hit up left and right, people asking you for beats, right? Every MC be like, Primo, let me get something. Like, are you just, how did you even filter people out? Like, there's too many people coming at you.
it varies from so many ways, because you'll even have artists that go, man, you work with that person, they're not big and a large artist, and you know, I have more stature or whatever. Why would you work with me? It just varies, man. Part of it is just my DJ. I have what you call a DJ mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so it could be based on your voice, because that's what attracted me to Guru, was his voice. I never heard a voice like that. So I'm really into voices. You know, certain people can rap their ass off and their vocal style just doesn't grab me.
Yeah.
And they can be nice and not like their music to a degree. Their voice may not make me want to do a joint for them. You know, so
do you make beats with artists in mind, or is it always just you do? Oh, so you do
only.
Yeah.
Only. And when it's time to do it, like, I don't be like, oh, here, I got 20 beats to play. You pick one that you think fits. No, I'm making it for you while you waiting, and then it's ready to go. That's why I think they match better, because especially if I'm a big fan, it's like, oh, I already know what you need.
So when it was like, if we go to It's Unbelievable, like with Big, you had that track laid out?
No. He called me, the album was done, and he called and said, I need one more for the streets. And I'm like, dude, I don't even have time to go in. He's like, come on, Prem, because we were friends almost a year prior, because I lived at Branford Marcellus's house, the jazz musician.
Mm-hmm.
I lived at Brand, me and Guru lived at Branford Marcellus's house, because he became the music director for The Tonight Show when Jay Leno had just taken over for Johnny Carson. So he was the music director, so he was moving to L.A. His brownstone that he had in Brooklyn, he's like, yo, if y'all are looking for a place to live, y'all could take my place and just pay me the rent. I'm going to sell it eventually, but until I sell it, just pay me the rent and y'all can stay there. We're like, cool. Because we met through Spike Lee from doing jazz music for his Mo Better Blues soundtrack. And that's how we got cool with Branford. Branford, so we were on Washington Avenue between Lafayette and Green. Big and them hang on Washington Avenue and Fulton on that corner. Everything, and you see in the videos from the old videos,
mm-hmm.
on the corner, and they're doing the pull-ups and everything. That's the block that they hang on the reg. And Big is always there, especially on the weekends. So every Friday, Saturday, me, you know, J-Rue, Dab, Melika, Suge, we'd always go down to the end of the block and just drink 40s and get drunk with Big and Junior Mafia and smoke all the trees that we can smoke.
Oh my God.
And just talk about music and whatnot. And he didn't even have a deal back then. You know, Puff would pull up in the Lincoln Town car. Puff was always advanced on the new way of fly when it came to, you know, we were thinking limousines was still the move. Lincoln Town car. He said, yeah, this is the new way to get around. You know, it's inconspicuous. It's, you know, you just pull up, you get out, you have a driver. I was like, wow. And that became the new standard. And later on, it became the SUV, the black SUVs.
Yeah.
And that's still a standard.
It's so funny you said you guys were drinking and then just smoking all the trees and just shooting the shit. And then we would all be like, oh, that's what we should be doing. So then my friends and I would be like, let's go buy 40s and roll some blunts and listen to these guys talk about doing it.
Yeah. But when Big said he needed a track, he goes, yo, just anything. I know you could pull one off. So that's why it's just do-do-do-do-do. It's just little stuff. We call them stabs when they're just those short notes.
Uh-huh.
And that's DJ and producer talk. So he's like, yo, it could be that simple. I started doing that. And he goes, that's dope. Do different versions of that. So like even on the hook,
uh-huh.
it's playing a different pattern. And then when he's rhyming, sometimes it goes, dun, 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 yeah. dun, dun.
Biggie Smalls.
Bum, 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 bum. Yeah. yeah. So,
dun, dun, dun.
And he was like, that's it.
Yeah. Man.
He was like, that's it. And he gave me the R. Kelly idea to, I got gnats in here in the winter. He is the one to say, yo, scratch Unbelievable from Your Body's Calling, because that was one of our favorite R. Kelly songs.
Oh, yeah.
At that time. And I said, it might be out of key, but let me do it tomorrow. Because I didn't have at that time, you couldn't use Serato and pull an MP3.
Sure.
I had to go find,
you gotta go get the record. Vinyl. Yeah.
Yeah. And I did it, and it just sounded so in sync. And I mixed the record the same day, and maybe like even 3 days later, I remember we're driving back to Brooklyn and Hot 97, which is the big station in New York.
Yeah.
Flex is playing it, but I know Biggie always gives his friends the shit in advance. I'm hearing it blasting in this other guy's car, and we're trying to pull up to him to see who it is, because we think it maybe is one of Biggie's peoples, and be like, oh, yo, what's up? It's somebody we don't know. And I'm like, yo, how'd you get that? Because it's only 3 days later.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even not album not out yet.
He's like, who the fuck are you, man?
He said, yo, this is on Hot 97 right now. I pull my radio on. I go, oh, shit. And, you know, of course, oh, Premier, what's up, Gangstar? Whatever. But, and we got that all the time back then and still do. But that was like, wow, it's already moving. And next thing you knew, I remember Puff said, we're going to make that the B-side of Juicy. So we got the streets and we got the radio. And then that was the first gold single I ever got in my career.
Really? That was the first one?
On the wall.
Man.
Yeah.
I got to ask this. Because I heard this and I was like, this is just bonkers to me. How the fuck does Cannabis pass on the Devil's Pie beat?
Who knows? And he hates that I talk about it, but it's all good. I mean, he's still my homie. But, I mean, it was simple. You don't like it. And I'm one of the few to give the check back. You get half up front. When you do the job, turn it in, you get the other half. I gave it back like the next day or a day after, once the offices opened, and gave it back out of respect for him, because I don't want to take your first half of your budget. You can use it or keep it for your pockets. But since it didn't click, it just happened that D'Angelo called right when Cannabis is leaving the lab. And right when he's leaving, he's like, yo, what you come in? D'Angelo had a friendship already. So when he said, what are you up to? I said, man, I'm just leaving. Me and Cannabis worked on something, but he didn't use the beat. And he said, what are you doing with it? And I was like, I don't know. I mean, we just did it. He goes, can I hear it? I'm like, well, it's not really for a singer to sing on. He goes, come bring it. I'm at Electric Lady at Jimi Hendrix studio.
Wait, so at this point, he hasn't even heard it like over the phone. He's just like, just bring it?
No, no. Yeah, okay. Just bring it. Brought it because I had just cooked it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So we call him Biss. Biss said, I need a driving mean bassline record. I'm going to do this song called Niggonometry.
But I mean, that's what that beat is.
Yeah. It's called Niggonometry. And he said, I'm going to do that. And that's what I cooked up. And we just didn't see eye to eye on that being the right track. So when I got to D'Angelo's and played it for him, he just started going, whoa, oh, I'm going to fucking kill this. And I'm like, you sure? And he's like, yeah. And next thing, I don't know if people have seen the picture of me, D'Angelo, Alchemist, and J Dilla together, because J Dilla was there recording some drums and Questlove was there recording some stuff, actually for the How Does It Feel record. And I remember D'Angelo's trainer was there. He had just walked in and said, yo, you ready to work out? And he was like, give me a couple hours. And then D'Angelo goes, yo, my first video, I'm going to be naked in it. And it's going to be, you know, I'm just going to be standing there naked. I was like, word? He's like, yeah. And then when that video dropped, man.
I mean, yeah, I remember that. I mean, that was a wild, like, that was such a crazy choice, you know? I mean, like, to make, it was a statement thing where people were like, this dude's naked, butt naked singing. Yeah.
And even men that were like, oh, man, want to watch that? They're watching it.
They're like, They're like, you know what?
you're watching it.
look at this guy. This dude hired a trainer for sure.
Yeah.
Yo, but it's funny because his reaction is how I reacted to hearing that. Like, because I actually, you know, really like beats even more. Like, I'll just listen to instrumentals because I just enjoy them. I mean, I like listening to the finished record too, but that thing, it hits so hard that when I heard that Biss passed on it, I was like, that doesn't even add up in my head. It's such a grimy, just punch you in the face. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like head bobber. It's a wild thing.
And honestly, that's how a lot of us are. You know, we have a big circle of producers that all respect the game a different way. You know, I could always talk to Showbiz and Alchemist and just, you know, from Knots to, you know, Just Blaze to Mr. Walton Evil D to, man, just so many, to Marley Marl. And we like the beat first, because if the beat is ill, you got to spit some shit.
Yeah.
So it's about the beat. And, you know, for us, you know, especially DJs.
Yeah. I mean, I'll listen to just instrumentals all the time because I love the beat, you know. That's what hooked me to this music, are the beats.
I appreciate the fact that you've been into what we've been doing. It lets me know that we're certified in so many different, you know, areas of the world.
Oh my God, man! I mean, it's just by the way, because you mentioned Dilla, I remembered that I watched an interview one time. It was after he passed, and his mom was doing the interview.
And shout out to my Dukes.
Shout out to her. She said, it was so funny the way she said it, that that people would come up, hit up Dilla and be like, "Hey man, let me get that beat." Like they'd hear it, and that he would be like, "That's not for you. That's way too advanced for you." But she would say it. She said that she was like, "Nah. You're not appropriate for this right here."
Right.
Which that I just love.
I love. Feel like that nowadays. We feel like that with so many artists. You know, it's like I'm glad our era still exists, and the age thing is actually not even a factor anymore. Because you know, everybody's like, "Oh, when I'm 40, I'm retiring." Shoot, most of the 40 and over are doing the best shit.
In comedy too, by the way. 100%, not even close. I mean, yeah. I would say the best comedians are basically 50 or older. It's you know, that's when they're the best artists. I don't know, man. I mean, it makes
yeah.
Do you ever feel? Do you? I mean, like, I know this sounds ridiculous asking you this, but did you ever have, or do you ever have moments feeling like I need to, you know, there's whatever the sound of today is. I need to morph or change what I'm doing. Like, does that ever enter your mind, or do you just go like, I stick to what I want to make?
Never. I can do that. I think it's actually easy, and it's not a diss. Yes. It's just very simple for me to do. It's very reminiscent of the earlier drum machines that we were raised on. Shout to a Manny Fresh. I remember when he said a lot of his style and sound comes from like a Mantronics and artists like that. That drum machine style. And I love the fact that he paid homage to an artist like Mantronics, who's one of my favorite producers ever in hip hop. And I'm a huge fan. And so for him to recognize that and still be heralded as one of the best producers, because Manny Fresh is one of the best ever as well.
Manny Fresh is dope.
Yeah, man, just what he did for the whole Cash Money for you. And to have such a variety of beats for Wayne and Turk and Juvie. And anybody else that came through that stage, with the Big Thomas, with Baby, everything, you know. So that's what it reminds me of. And again, if you're revisiting that style, that's cool. I choose, and the young generation should have their lane to enjoy what they like. Just like how our parents were like, "Oh, that rap ain't music. You need to listen to Marvin Gaye." But it's like, we are listening to Marvin Gaye because we love that too.
Yeah.
But this rap shit is dope too, you know.
For sure. Now, I know you have probably a million stories about like Guru, but do you ever remember, for instance, like I was thinking about like the first time I heard Mass Appeal, and then I always wanted to know what those moments were like. You must have had a thrill to have beats and then play them for him and see his face, right? Like that had to be. Yeah. Like, do you remember playing that? Because that still is in such an insane, iconic beat, you know, Mass Appeal.
I mean, thank you.
I imagine that, you know, after that came out, everybody was like, "What the fuck, man? Give me a beat."
Oh yeah.
Like
and I've told the story about how we made that to make fun of radio.
Really?
Because of the whole little tinky little, we used to call them Tinkerbell beats, and just that, it sounded like elevator music, you know.
Now you're sitting there just waiting for it to get to your floor and looking at the number thing, count up and down,
and that's what it reminded me of as far as the concept. Because with Gangstar, we write the whole album out and stick it on the wall. So he writes every title, sticks it on the wall. And then I just randomly go, "I'm gonna work on that one today. I'm gonna work on this one today." It's not in any order. It's just the entire album written out.
It'll say Mass Appeal on the wall.
Yeah, and then it'll say our first single. The singles I do last because I want the single to be fresh when we're turning the album in.
Right.
See, here's our first single. Just made it last night. This is what we're going with. And the label never gave us a problem with us saying these are our three singles, because our deals were usually three singles, you know, three videos, three singles, you know, and then move, and then concert, tour support for a tour, and then you start another album. That was kind of like the rotation for the first three. Actually, the second, third, and fourth, because No More Mr. Nice Guy, we call that our resume, because I was still just learning how to perfect beats. So we actually were doing it together. Me, our engineer, Shlomo, and Guru. So the three of us were all meshing the drum machine. Step in the Arena is when I was like, let me take over and really learn how to master making beats. DJing, I got down. Let me master beats. And I think I got better by daily operation. But that was our routine of how we would, you know, circulate the money every album. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so with that said, with Mass Appeal, that was when the music was starting to get a little more watered down with hip hop. And we felt like, man, it can't go. We can't lose the integrity of the sound.
Yeah.
So he would, like I said, he always writes the album out and has a little description. You know, what you want this time about an annoying chick. And he'll just, so that lets me know, make the track match that concept. And that's how we've always done every album.
Do you have like great memories though of his reaction to something that you're playing for him the first
time? Yeah.
Tell me one. Do you remember one that like you check this out, you just press play on this?
You know my steez.
You know, ah.
Because that was our first single for the Moment of Truth. And your first single is everything. We always like to make sure the core audience that grew up with us and support us from day one get their record, even if we do a royalty with Casey and JoJo, or yeah, we do Love Sick, or we do X Girl to Next Girl. We make sure the first record is for the streets. Mm-hmm. And that one was just so unique and purposely done. And next thing you know, that record did so good for us, man. And I knew he would flip out with the reaction. And not only that, he's a fan of all the other people, from a Nas to a Jay to a, yeah, Big to a Rakim or Kane or you know, anybody I would produce outside KRS. And even when I do beats for them, I'm still going to make sure we get hot beats too, because for one, I'm going to be on the cover with you. I'm doing, yeah, the interviews with you, magazines, everything with you. So we got to have heat as well. So I never would like give him less flavor stuff,
sure,
than I gave other artists. It's always 100% love with every artist, including the you know, Gangsta. So
yeah, you know, my Steez is also iconic, incredible. Was there ever a phone call for Guru to you? Like, you gave that to him?
Never,
never.
Never, never. People spread rumors about it, like, yeah, oh yeah, and you were giving hot stuff to other artists, that's not even how I get down.
There was there's a thing about like your production style where, I mean, I think the best way, like, I feel like I got to the point where I feel like I could identify that you had made a beat, but it doesn't sound like another one of your beats, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm, I could go, mm-hmm, like, Primo made this, but it doesn't, it's not like it sounds like this other song.
Absolutely.
Which I don't, like, yeah, it's such a unique, you know, thing as an artist to be like, I feel that that's who made this, but it's not reminiscent of another song.
Yeah, I call those my left field beats, mm-hmm, you know. I just did one for Conway the Machine, shout to him, Yo Benny, Hold Your Head and get well, and shout the West Side Gun, the whole Griselda, BSF, man, they're so dope, man. The whole Buffalo scene is now a new additional sound to New York, and the one on Conway's new album, From King to a God, the last song on the album, which another, I hate doing all these shout outs the shout outs for the right reason, but just a sad reason. DJ Shay, who's their big guy that kept the Buffalo scene popping, he just passed right before Conway's album drop, and the song is called Nothing Less, and the emotion of it is just so dope for me as a fan of him, and he even said, you know, it ain't got to be the hardcore hoodie stuff this time, because we've done that before. He's like, yo, the left field shit you do is dope too, and it's real mellow, but it's just funky. I love this, the vibe of the beat, and he sprayed it, especially after Shay passed, because I hit him like after the funeral, was like, yo, if you don't want to do it, you know, go ahead and turn your album. And he's like, hell no. Since he passed, I'm even going deeper on it. He said, I'm going to be sending it to you in the next couple of days.
Damn.
And then he sent it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking that the first time that I heard something where I think I was a sophomore in high school, where I heard MCs Act Like They Don't Know, and like, oof, and my head turned, and I was like, that sounds, like in my head, I go like, that sounds like Premiere, you know, like I just didn't know at the time, you know, someone has to like, yeah, tell you, because I wasn't like searching online or something. I heard that, and I was like, it sounds like his kind of beat, and I didn't have the concept that like a producer works with all these different artists, and it started to like make sense to me. And I was like, oh shit. Cause that, that song's also, you know, that's an iconic record for sure.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. The fact that me and Chris had already worked together on the Return of the Boom Bap, heavily, me, him, Showbiz and Kid Capri, and KRS did some of the beats as well. He makes dope beats. He did Madism for fucking, Channel Live. That's one of the favorite records. And, so he was just like, let's get back and do some more. And he said, I need that first jump off record. And I was
man. I mean, that's, you know, whatever now, what, 25 years later, that shit's still.
Yeah, man.
That's amazing.
Yeah, actually, you know, my Steve is 23 years old as of yesterday.
Yeah, you post. That's crazy, man. That's crazy. Do you ever have you make so many beats and work with so, do you ever have a record where you're like, you know, it's cool, we did it, we're done, and it surprises you that it became a huge hit? Like you weren't expecting it to take off?
Yeah, Dwick we knew was going to take off, but it exploded.
Right.
Yeah, take off and then explosion is a different thing, because explosion is just kaboom and everything disintegrates. But that was one disintegration that we were so, I mean, it did so much for us, you know what I'm saying?
And yeah.
To collab with Nice and Smooth, who, not for one, are great performers. They you know, Greg Nice does predominantly all the beats on all their albums, and he has a dope style that matches the group. Same thing with M.O.P. Yeah, and Lil Fame does a lot of the beats for M.O.P. because he, you know, he knows how to make it work for them. You know, besides D.R. Period, who originated the M.O.P. sound.
Well, and Nice too. Also, such a unique guy on the mic. I mean, that's his own style completely.
Yeah,
it's incredible. Mm-hmm. What about the opposite of that? Did you ever have a record where you're like, "This is gonna blow up, man," and you were surprised that it didn't commercially succeed?
I never really think in that fashion, like, yeah, this is going to be hot. Yeah. I mean, this is going to be big. We just let it ride. And if it blows and goes there, cool. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But because we knew we had enough fan base to where our tours have always done good for us. So the fact that our tours made so much did money and success, and even everybody we took with us, we understood that we have so much involved with staying consistent. EPMD was one of the artists that made us, that the first one to ever take us on tour, first of all. Is that my phone clicking like that? Get out the way. EPMD was the first artist to take us on tour with Redman and Dos Effex.
Yeah.
Father MC and
did you dig like Sermon's beats? Were you in? He was like super funky too.
Oh yeah,
EPMD
man, they're an original. The name and the music match them. I always like the music to match the way you look. When you're Eric B and Rakim, and you see what they look like with the music, they match.
Yeah,
you know, I think me and Guru match our songs. You know, Mobb Deep match their songs. You know, so. That's important. You know, Van Halen looked like the way their songs sound.
Exactly.
You know, with David Lee Roth and Sammy Hagar, you know, so.
I want to ask you something about beat making, because I've actually, you know, I've never seen it done. Do you have, like, I was thinking about, Manifest, right? You got that loop. There's the Miles Davis, Charlie Parker, right? A Night in Tunisia. Mm-hmm. The song starts, and that's that loop that's used in Manifest. In your head, like, I'm just trying to get into like how you actually come up with this shit. Like, what the fuck is going on in this guy's head? is that something that you remember a song from way back, and you either have that isolated or you wrote it down, or is it that you're just listening to records and you hear it and you just stop in that moment? You're like, what about this? Or is it both?
It's both. Yeah. Sometimes I hear, oh, I know what I could do. Or I know something that's equivalent to what I'm looking for sound wise. And then the other one is like what we call digging, you know,
it's just crate digging
for records.
Through,
and just searching and searching. It could take 20 records just to find that sound to go with what's in your head. But it's in my head first.
It is in your head first.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case specifically, like with Manifest, is that, like a song you did hear, is it like, was it in your memory bank as like a kid, or was it
no
no
The only thing that was in my head was to take heed to the words that I manifest from Big Daddy Kane, from the word to the mother, because we were already playing that record in our parties. So I'm very good. I'm a very good Rolodex of remembering lines from records, because DJs, especially battle DJs, they look for lines to be able to scratch in a battle. You know, I'll do the such and such and such and such and do this and such and such and such. And Guru writes a lot of battle lyrics, you know, like, you know, I'm a dope MC, you know, you can't rap like me. And those lines work in a battle. So I have that same ear. I'm just not a battle DJ. I'm better at just scratching and cutting, you know, with a certain precision that Marley Marl influenced me to, you know, want to be as sharp with the way and what was chosen to cut, you know, so.
That's incredible. I got to ask you this, because I remember this story coming out and I don't even feel like it's fully appreciated. I don't think people fully appreciate what you did with one of the best yet, with the, you know, the most recent Gangstar album, meaning like the way that I understood this is that, you know, you wanted to do an album. Obviously Guru has passed, and you hear about the fact that there are all these vocals that you haven't heard yet, right? That
my manager Ian, I told Ian, because I just know the guy that had him. I just knew, based off of how everything ended, and I used to want to be a detective before I got into music. So I still have that mentality where I'm always going, I bet you, you know, like, that's still how I am on it. Just everything, even just what's going on in the world today and everything. I'm always like, I bet if such that will happen to this, you know. So I'm still that way. Same thing with this guy. I was like, yo, man, I know he's sitting on something. I know he is. And that was almost 9 years later.
And then did you get word that he was sitting on something, or did somebody go ask?
My manager is on point. Shout out to Ian. He reached out to the right people and said, you know, what if certain things could be handled, you know, business-wise, to get our hands on what you might possibly have, you know? And, and they're like, well, how much for the might possibly, you know what I'm saying? And it just went back and forth. And plus I'm willing to go this far, not this far. If it goes beyond my numbers, forget it. Our history's made, I'm good, you know? But I knew it'd be great for the fans.
Of course.
For Guru's family to get at least one more record out of him, or a few more. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Based off of what he was sitting on.
So then you actually have to go verify that these aren't just like shit, that's things you've heard before, and you're like, oh, I got this. So then you go to like a listening session of sorts to verify that, oh, these are all lyrics that I've never heard that are recorded.
Yeah, as long as he's not there.
Right.
Yeah, as long as he's not there.
And then dude's not there, but then you agree, you acquire these, right? Like you buy buy them back, essentially. And then now you're left with, you have these lyrics and you're creating songs. Like you're creating records for each one. You have to make a beat, right? Like based on the lyrics there.
Dude, it's like a remix. It's like a remix. But because I got to listen to the beats that were on there, and there were records I never heard from a couple of people came out the woodworks. Like, that was my record and we have the original version. And you know, if they proved us it properly all the way across the board legally, we're like, all right, but we'll deal with that business when we deal with it, which is foul, because that means they weren't something that they did together. They were things that were taken when he wasn't, he had already passed, you know what I'm saying? Where when I started checking dates on the, you know, thank goodness with Pro Tools, if you don't alter the dates from when it's created, there's a date created and then there's a date modified. The date created were years before that guy existed. Sure. So I'm like, wait a minute, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This is like after the album dropped.
Right.
You know,
so you're like,
I'm like,
your detective mind is coming alive again. Figuring it out.
It's like I bought stolen goods.
Man.
You know what I'm saying? But fuck it. I got their mind now. Paperwork was airtight that they belong to me. And I said, let me just make it work. And, you know, it was emotional, man. I had his ashes in the room, and thanks to his family to give me a little piece. You know, obviously more people have it, but they gave me a little piece that I'm going to give to also to Big Shug, because they started Gangstar before me. So I'm going to give him some. And other than that, I just messed around until I could get it going. And the first one I did was Bad. It was actually the last song on the album. What's the last song on the album?
I have it right here. Let me tell you.
Oh, yeah, the Bless the Mic. Bless the Mic.
Okay.
Bless the Mic. That's the first one I did. I was like, wow, man, it feels good just to hear him rhyming in my music again. It sounds like Gangstar, the traditional sound that we have together. And then next thing you know, I did Bad Name, and I was like, that's the, like, a steez.
Yes.
You know, Mass Appeal jump off. And then my manager was like, yo, you should get J. Cole to get on a record. And Family and Loyalty beat I made, and he was like, you should get him on that. And, you know, and I was like, I don't know if Cole's going to hop on it or not. And I reached out to him, and he immediately was like, bro, this shit got me fucking bugging. I'm on it. I got you. Man. And he sent back some of the dopest lyrics ever on a Gangstar record.
I mean, the album was a gift to your fans, man. It was definitely, you know, mm-hmm. it was a gift, man.
100%.
Tell me about Making Hit, Man.
I love that one.
Yeah,
that's my shit.
Oh, that's the shit, man. I've walked out on stage because, you know, when you go to venues, they go, what do you want to walk out to? And I've come out with Hitman because it just puts me in, like, I mean, it puts me in a mood, you know. I love
seeing you wearing my merch, man.
I love it, man. I mean, coming out,
I got the shit on.
Coming out to like your musical choice, even that walk from backstage to the mic, and you're about to do comedy, it just, even if it's like 20 seconds, it puts you in a headspace.
Yeah, I love that.
Feel good.
Yeah, immediately after I heard the vocals over my beat, I was like, that's got to be Q-Tip doing playing the hitman and being the one that's going to do the job, because Guru described it well. And Q-Tip had just got through having throat surgery. So he was like, man, my voice is really scratchy right now.
His hook is dope on that, man.
Yeah. He said, I could do it, but it might not sound right. You tell me. And if not, don't use it. And I was like, just send it to me. He went right in and did it. He sent me a video of him doing it in his studio. And then at the end of it, he goes, how was that? And that's how the video ends.
I
have not deleted it. Oh, nice. And I called him right back and I said, motherfucker, that's it. That's it. I was so happy, man. I was like, that's got to be the third song, the second song after the intro. Like, I know how to sequence albums. That's my thing.
That shit hits so hard, man. I mean,
I love sequencing, yeah.
And then, by the way, you just did like the intro for Joe Budden's thing.
For the podcast. Shout out to Joe. We have the same management. So
that's just, I was like, God damn, that's a way to open a podcast, man. That's dope.
Yeah, man. Joey, like I said, I've known Joey for a long time, but since we have the same management, we're always together a lot and see each other. So when he asked me to do it, I was on it. Like, yeah,
cool.
Man.
I might ask you the same thing.
Let's talk about it.
All right, let's talk about it, man. I mean, I got a number, and if it goes above my number, I'm cool. So,
and I got to say, man, I heard when you mentioned the album, who were you doing the interview with? And you said, you're a Gangstar's album. And the fact that you discussed how, what I had to go through to do it. And I think I texted you that day, like, yo, man, I heard what you said about, you know, you could imagine what I had to go through to get this album to sound like that, man. And,
Primo, that's like, it's a remarkable feat. Like, if even, you know, as gifted as you are and you have all the accolades and everybody, like, the fact that that's the story of that album. I think it's one of the most amazing stories I've ever heard of putting together an album. I mean, you took your partner's lyrics, who he passed away, and you had to acquire, I mean, the whole process, it's like, it's a real story, man. It's a real, it's an amazing, there should be a documentary about that album.
We're working on just a documentary anyway of our career, because thank goodness we have that many tapes of our old footage, and we've been digitizing them. Shout out to Keebler. He's been digitizing them in the next room. and everything's getting, you know, to where we can pull, and our interview lineup is amazing from, you know, so many people have done the interview already, and it's going to be dope once we finish it all up.
I cannot wait. I don't know if this is cheesy, but do you have a favorite gang star?
It's the biggest question ever.
I know. I mean, you know, I know that, like, people ask me in a different way. Obviously, they'll ask you about, like, jokes and, like, and you're like, I don't know, man, you know, but I feel like with music, it's, there's different, like, for the people that make it, you might have, like, you know, different feelings about you, like, it's not just the final product, you know, sometimes it's like you remember what it was to make a song or something. Do you have one or no?
You know, like, if I had to pick a couple, definitely, like, you know, my Steez, Above the Clouds. I love Robin Hood Theory.
Yeah.
I like Next Time because I just lost my accountant, but she was like a mom to me. So, rest in peace to Mary. I even got a tat on my arm of her. So, you know, I must've been, definitely missing her. And then, so Next Time was done the day she died, and I'm just in a sad mood, and Guru's like, yo, just do one more song. And I'm like, man, I'm so stressed out that she passed. He goes, then do it in memory of her, and just whatever comes to mind, do it. And so Next Time, the sample has almost a funeral sounding horn, and then Guru bodied the lyrics.
Yeah. So for you, like, you hear that and that memory comes to you every time you hear that song.
Every time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
Just to get a rap too, that was one of my favorites.
Yeah, man, you know what's funny? I remember because CDs used to be big and they would come out on Tuesdays, right?
Yep.
And Full Clip came out in 99, is that right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I was a junior in college and I went Tuesday morning to the CD store and I picked up Full Clip and then I put it on and I shit my pants. And then, so I had my two friends, Casey and Justin, we were roommates and we loved hip hop and we loved Gangstar. And I remember like Case getting in the car and I was like, fucking put your seatbelt on. You're going to bash your head against the window when you hear this. I just, you know, you just have those memories.
Oh, no doubt.
You know, it's like, it's one of the, if you're extraordinary things about being alive, there's so many great things about being alive, and one of them is if you have the good fortune to have the ability to hear, you get to experience music, and you hope mm-hmm. that you can have music that really moves you in some way that you connect with, and you know, and for different people it's different things, you know, like my wife, like, you know, for her it's like punk stuff that she grew up with, or like, she loves Joy Division and Bauhaus.
Me too. I love Joy. Yeah. Bela Lugosi's Dead and, you know, Love Will Tear Us Apart, all that shit.
Yeah.
Because that's my era too. Because that's I graduated high school in 84. So that's really part of our sound of not Gangstar, but just my upbringing. Early U2, like October and the Boy album.
But for
me,
I
was going to those concerts. The Smiths.
She's a big Smiths fan too. For me though, that experience is like most enhanced by like what you've done. So your music to me has been like just an absolute, you know, it's like one of the joys of my life is listening to.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Can I ask you one more thing?
That's why I still do it. Anything. Yeah.
So great. I
you do another hour if you want to do another hour.
I'm fucking so happy to hear that. So one thing I also remember, cause you know, there'd be surprises if you're not like, sometimes you just hear something and you're like, oh my God, what is this, right? So picking up Tony Touch, the Peacemaker, right?
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Toka.
Shout out Tony Toka. How does an album that, like, so Tony as a DJ, you know, huge, came up huge making like mixtapes and everything in New York, right? And then when he goes, I'm going to make an album, does he like, how do those albums come together? Does he call you and go, I have an album coming out, I want you guys to just do a record on it?
Yeah, because we all, in New York, everybody knows everybody. I mean, it's really like that. Like I say, even with Jay-Z and all them before they got to where they are now, we all saw each other on a regular, you know, it wasn't like, ooh, there goes Jay. Ooh, there goes Biggie. It was just like, oh, it's just like, what up, motherfucker?
Yeah.
You know, like that was standard. That was regular. we were all in the same spots like that much, because there were so many different things in New York hip hop wise that was damn near every day of the week.
Yeah.
You know, like the tunnel and all that's on the weekends, on Sundays or whatever, but there's always something else going on. I mean, that's why I like on So Ghetto, where Jay-Z says, you know, this day I'm at Cheetah Club, this day at Life, you know, this day I'm at this place, because that's really how it is, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, Tupac, all of us were running around together. You know, we'd be able to, like the Tupac stories you hear, and certain of them were like, that didn't happen, because we were really, really with him. You know, we know Mo Preem, we know the Outlaws and everybody, you know, way before all the drama and all that stuff, we all hung with each other.
You really did. So that was,
you see those pictures of Guru of him, they got like 3 pictures together.
Yeah. So when Tony calls you though, it really is like that casual. Hey man, will you guys do a record for me?
Oh yeah. 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 Cause Tony just the regular guy that we see at everything. And he's DJing a lot of the gigs, you know?
Right.
So, there's just so many, you know, even hole in the wall spots where the same fans and the same people, the same music that you love from us to Tribe Called Quest and on to Latifah, she's in all the spots back then. You know what I'm saying? Because she was still on the come up. She wasn't,
right.
Nats are fucking in here. But,
I lost my mind. Yeah. I lost my mind hearing, the Peacemaker. Like when I heard that, I was like, what the fuck is this, man?
Yeah, that was easy.
Jesus.
Just Tony's like, oh, it's near theme song with you and Guru. So since we knew each other, it was real. That's why it's Stabs again. Bloom, bloom, yeah. Bloom, bloom, bloom. Simple little.
Well, it's official. I love Stabs. New shirt.
So do I.
So
most simple music does outsell the more complex stuff.
When yeah.
It's simple.
Yeah.
It resonates a lot more.
Really?
In most cases, yeah. At least for me.
I know you've been asked this a million times too, but I'm going to ask it a million and one.
It's cool.
Is there any artist that you haven't worked with that you want to work with?
Yeah, DMX. I've always wanted to work with DMX. I've been pushing to get that to happen now. Oh, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I'm always leaning on Swizz. I'm always leaning on whoever he deals with in his camp that's in charge of his being his point person. And I'll lean to Swizz again. Yo, Swizz. You know.
Listen, the world needs
Swizzy.
DMX, please listen to us.
Oh, my God, man.
Call Primo back and send some fucking lyrics.
Come on, X.
Come on, man.
Dogman X, man. Let's get it.
I mean, why don't you just start sending him a sample of just different dogs barking and see if that gets him going, you know?
That's a good idea, man. Shit, I'll make sure you get writer's credit.
Appreciate that, man.
Yeah, yeah. I always make sure everybody that deserves their credit gets and their share of the money, you know, if they deserve it, absolutely.
That's and then, deserved. You know what you could do is you send him like a Shih Tzu, and then you're like, you didn't like that shit, and then you send him like a German Shepherd. You just keep send him different dog barks, you know?
Yeah. He's going to know what the I was a little Shih Tzu. I ain't fucking with that.
Are you a fan? Are you a fan, like a genuine fan of any, you know, newer artist today? Like anybody coming up that you're like,
I like Roddy Ricch. You know, that's the newer sound of stuff. I love Roddy Ricch. Who else do I like? I love Travis Scott's work, which I've told this several times, that his father taught me how to play drums and his uncle Travis taught me how to play bass. So,
what?
Yeah, and his grandmother was my English teacher. So I always
all Travis Scott's family?
Yeah. Except for his aunt Sonora, who's the younger sibling of the Ms. Webster and Mr. Webster had 3 children, Travis, Jack, and Sonora. We call Sonora Vivi. What up, V? Every time I do this, somebody says, Chris, because they call me Chris. Chris was talking about you on this. Chris was talking about you on that. So shout to Vivi. But she's the only one that really didn't mess with the music like that. But her brother Travis and Travis Scott's real name is Jack Webster, like his dad.
Mm-hmm.
So he's junior. And, you know, I'm happy for his success. I've been trying to get at him too about on some side, some things, and I still haven't made it happen yet. So I'm gonna I'll catch him him around Christmas.
Well, we need that to happen too, man. we need that to happen.
Yeah, I like Roddy Ricch. I like what he does. I love DaBaby.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love what he's doing. I like Cardi. Yeah, I like Cardi, man.
Let me when did you I know you realized that you're there's first realizing you made the right choice, right? Like when you're making music, hey, we made it, we made it, as in it's playing on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like everything is completely other level with Nas is like? Because that is one of the albums or the records that I hear, and I'm like, this, I just remember how big that was, right? That it would just be an even bigger ascent within the world of hip hop. Like, you made this? This is insane.
Yeah, I mean, it's, with Nas, is always fun because you know what you're going to get once you give him the beat. You know what I'm saying? And saying, being that I've been there from the beginning of his career, from being with Main Source all the way into doing his Illmatic, I sequenced and mastered the Illmatic album for him. Nice. I actually was on, I met AZ the last day of all recording, coming to pick up the masters, and he was like, yo, I got one more song that I'm adding to the album. I want you to come pick it up, and I want you to hear this. It's called Life's a Bitch. This guy can rap. His name is AZ, and his father was there too. Olu was there, and he said, my dad's going to play horn on the song. And I met both of them, and then I waited for him to finish running the master, took that with me, and he said, just make sure, he created the intro, the Genesis. He did that. Nas did that himself.
Uh-huh.
And he said, make sure that's first. Everything else, put in whatever order you want.
And then, do you remember getting a call when he heard it? Or do you play in front of
him? He came to mastering. Okay. Yeah. So he was at the mastering session, but he trusted me to put in the sequence. And shout to Tony Darcy, one of the best mastering engineers ever. I've never seen, I had other mastering engineers, but he was the first one I would see dance while he's turning knobs. He's going, mm-hmm. Oh, this sound like a single. Yeah. Did they dropping this first? Like, he's doing all that shit while he's blasting the music, turning knobs. You know what I'm saying? He's like that now.
I realized that, just even talking, what I want all producers to do now is just have cameras mounted everywhere, so that I can see everybody's face when they first hear the beats. I could get lost in a YouTube wormhole of seeing people hear shit for the first time, because I just remember every one of these. I'm just going through. I love that I've Committed Murder remix you did, the Macy.
With Macy and Mos Def.
And Mos Def. That shit is so amazing. I remember the first time I heard that, because I had picked up, that's on Lyricist Lounge Volume 2, I think it is.
Yeah, you know your shit.
And I remember that I picked it up just going I'm just picking it up. I didn't, that's when you would just go you look at names and you're like, this got to be at least something's good on here. And just hearing that and being what the fuck? This is, that's an amazing remix, man.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah, the Lyricist Lounge was a real popping thing in New York. I mean, a lot of artists got broken through that channel. And, that was another good platform back in those days, and they put a lot of MCs on.
Yeah, and I also remember I picked up when you did the Bumpy Knuckles, the Studio Time one. It was only a few tracks, right?
Yeah.
What was it?
The Collection was the Studio Time is the EP.
It is the EP, okay.
And all that was just that and Collection. It was just beats that we that were turned down by other artists. And he was like, yo, give them to me and we'll make a collection of songs and I'll write rhymes to those beats. And we're actually about to re-release it because it was part of another distributor at the time. And now we own it.
Oh.
So I'm going to re-upload that.
Oh, dope.
And we have five new songs that we're going to add to it that you never heard. So, to give it a nice extra plus for the people that supported it.
Nice.
And the ones that I didn't even know. Yeah. So
good.
Shout out to Bumpy Knucks.
Shout out to Bumpy Knuckles. And and also I was not into as a band. I never listened to Limp Bizkit until you made a beat for them. Until wow. like that yeah. end together now.
Me neither. Like, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just remember that know. Like they're just like I can vaguely remember this like, hey, you know, Limp Bizkit's got a song with Method Man. I'm like, what? And then hearing that and I was like, this is unbelievable. Yeah. It's like, yeah, well they didn't make yeah. it. That's why it's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So
that's what enticed me to do it was my former manager at the time was like, yo, man, you do this record, you know, they even offered me a nice sum of money and I was still saying no. I'm not feeling it. And he goes, Method Man's on it. I go, oh really?
Shaquan? Okay.
So once he told me Method Man was on, I said, well, let me hear it because it was already done. So that bling,
yeah. Bling, yep.
Bling, that was already there.
That was
a Lethal.
Yeah. Okay.
Shout out to my dude Lethal. That's my guy who used to DJ for House of Pain. And then he was in Limp Bizkit. So me and Lethal go way back. Lethal sent that version with the lyrics and everything to that, but it was different drum programming. It didn't have the bass line and all that in there. So I said, only thing I can see myself doing is I would need to re-record Fred's vocal to get it better locked into my style of how I do things. And all it needs is a dope bass line and my drum bounce. And let me put my drums on it. So I just took his sample and reworked it to bounce to my drums and sent it right back to him. And they were like, this is it. And Fred came to D&D Studios to actually recut the vocal with me.
And so in when he comes in, do you then direct him like I want you to do it like this?
Mm-hmm.
And how did he took direction well?
Oh, absolutely. He was super cool. Yeah. And then even after it blew up, actually the plaque is sitting right there, 6 million sold.
Damn.
Looking at it right now.
6 million sold?
Yeah. Yeah. Got 6 million platinum, 6 times platinum album right here.
What year was that? I'm trying to. Do you remember when it came out?
It had to be around 98 as well.
It was?
Yeah, it had to be. It had to be. Yeah. What was that? It has to be. And then what it was is we shot the video and then that took off. And then right after we did the record and the video took off, he had me do the 25th anniversary of MTV and we performed with him on that. And then the best part, Fred hired me to DJ the Playboy Mansion pajama party.
Oh shit. You're like, and that's when I saved his number.
It was already saved, but 1999, Significant Other dropped June 22nd, 1999. So around full clip time, but yeah, man, that was an experience being in the Playboy Mansion, all the bunny rabbits running around and all the the Playboy bunnies. And
you're DJing that party?
He did. Me and DJ AM, God bless him. AM was my guy too. And I met him when he was 14. Him and Alchemist were on tour with Cypress Hill and House of Pain. And we all smoked a blunt together. Man. And next thing you know, we became the best of friends. So
this is what I want to do. I want to have a post COVID party when they finally go, it's over. And you DJ it, and we just throw a bash. Now I got a number, and I can't go above it. But I want to do it.
We're negotiable. We're very negotiable.
That's what I'm talking about. What's the other one? Oh, one video I love that you did, just because it gives you the feeling that you're watching someone make the beat is on classic. You know, the Better Than I've Ever Been. That's such a dope concept to see because. You feel like you're in the moment in that video.
Oh, dang. That's another remix. That's not the original.
No, that's
Rick Rubin did the original.
Yeah, and then you did the remix.
The one in the video is the remix, yeah. KRS called.
Come up with the idea to do that in the video, though?
No, KRS called. You're talking about in the video to do the drum machine and all
that
stuff?
Yeah, yeah. So you got like you feel like you're like, oh, shit.
I don't like showing how I make beats. Like, if you're with me, like, if you came to my lab, I don't mind cooking in front of you.
Yeah.
But I don't like everybody seeing my methods and everything. So when they were coming to film the video, I was like, man, the best thing I can do is, since the beat is already done, I'll just tap the pads real quick and just do a little thing like I am working on it.
Right. You don't want to give out the recipe.
No.
I'm with you on that.
You'll see. Yeah, it's close. You'll see.
Yep. You hear that, guys?
But in person, you're good.
In person?
Yeah, you Yeah, you can anytime.
That's what I want to see. That's a dream of mine, to see that in person, man. I want to give a shout out too, because you inspired me to do this. Shout out to Spin Bad, rest in peace.
Yeah,
he passed away recently. I have a very vivid memory. So I've been friends with Russell Peters for a long time. I used to open for him. He brought me to London, England, to do a bunch of shows in 2010. So 10 years ago. It was October of 2010, so it just passed the 10-year anniversary, and I went there with Starting from Scratch.
Yeah.
Oh, who is a fucking encyclopedia of music.
Yeah.
I mean, guy knows everything, and Spin and Russ and his whole crew. And I still remember vividly one of Russ's security guys had a son who was like a teenage son, like 17 years.
Who, Pick?
I think it was Pick's son.
Okay. Yeah, shout to Pick, man.
Yeah.
Shout to Eddie.
And I remember us all being in one of the vans, and Pick's son had a Gangstar shirt on. And then I want to say it was Spin was like, "What you know about Gangstar?" And and then he goes, "They're dope." And he goes, "Okay, name three songs." And like everybody just bullied his son.
Right.
Because, I mean, the poor kid was, like I said, probably like 17 or something.
Yeah.
And then like we just mocked him because he was scared he didn't know off the top of his head. And I don't know. It's just one of those memories that just, you know, didn't leave my mind, because I just started listing songs, and then we all just started to mock him. It was just a fun memory.
Russell's one of the greatest comedians ever, man.
He is, and he's one of the greatest guys ever too, man.
But it was stayed at all the houses except for the new one.
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of houses. But it was also such a cool thing, because Russ is such a hip hop junkie that, you know,
big time.
When his ascent, you know, grew, and he brought DJs on stage. And so for me, being like the opening act for him, it was such a cool peek into like what things can be. You know, I was like, "What?
Yeah.
You can do this?" And he's like, "Yeah, man." He goes, "My,"
yeah.
And they're like, they would have fun and like battle and do little scratch offs as people are being seated, and then I would get to pick songs. They go, "What do you want to hear tonight?" And I would, you know, walk out to whatever I want to hear that night. And you know, it was such a such a dope experience, and Spin was such a good guy, man. So
great guy, man. Just had a troubled lane that he couldn't get out of near the end, and you know, I've reached out to him many times, like, "Yo, dawgs, get it together," because we go that far back, you know, to the 90s.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? You know, shout to AV and JS1, and you know, that Rock the Casbah mixtape is a ultra classic. If you can ever find it, I'm sure you can find it on YouTubes of the world and everything else, but
he gave me, man, he would give me those little you know, little jump drives, like with mixes. As soon as they saw that I really liked it, him and Scratch would just get like send me shit. It was such a
Mad
great
creative.
Yeah, Mad creative. Creative. And they were just such, well, they are, you know, great guys, but I'll never forget that experience. And just rest in peace, Spin Bad, Chris Sullivan. Dope dude.
Yeah, 100%.
Dope dude, 100%. Man.
Yeah, man.
Well, look, man, I'm going to let you go. I absolutely cannot tell you how much I appreciate you doing this. It really is a
Thanks
dream.
Thanks for having
me. And, hopefully we can meet up at some point, you know, next time when the disease leaves the air and we're allowed to actually move around. I'll definitely be in
New
York.
We'll get over it, man. The strong survive, and I'm sure you're part of that strong, so and so am I. So we'll be all right. Our kids are good, and
that's it, man.
And everything, you know, we're still this older man that used to do security for the where I parked my car. He always goes, "Any day above ground is another good day," and I'm like, "Goddamn right,
damn right, dude." Oh, by the way, let me ask you this: I know you're a Texas guy who lives in New York now many years. Are you a big sports guy?
Yeah, I love sports.
What's like what are your teams?
Since I'm from Texas and Houston is where we, I was born in Houston anyway, but for me, it's sad because the Houston Oilers was my childhood.
Sure.
When they moved to Tennessee, they were the Tennessee Oilers briefly for a few months. And then I remember Bud Adams, who lived near our town where I grew up at, you know, okayed them to change the mascot name. And I remember they made the announcement, it was going to be a new name. We're going to announce next Sunday or whatever, you know. And then they like, we will now be the Tennessee Titans. And we're like, what about the Oilers? You know, like, how do you strip that away? And I know when they do the throwback jersey games that they usually do, they didn't do it this season, but they wear the Oilers jerseys. But I've been Houston everything from the Rockets to the Oilers to baseball. I played baseball in Little League. You know, I played football for a little while. And you know, you grow out of all of that when you start running the streets and doing stuff. But I've had my experience in sports. And now I've been still a big fan. I got all the apps from NFL.
Oh, you do? Okay.
The ESPN apps and all that stuff. And then on top of that, I just shout to Jalen Rose, you know, who's a great analyst on everything with sports, you know, no matter what it is.
Yes.
Yeah. So my son plays baseball. He's in a travel league. He's nine years old. So the travel league, you know, is really it's serious business.
Yeah.
So it's not like a little league where it's cute and they play for the summer. Their coaches is on them like you see bunt, we all supposed to yell it. And it's so crazy when a kid's bunting, they go bunt, and you know, like together and run towards home plate, like to position themselves to make sure they can stop the run and get them out before he gets to first. It's just a trip to see all of that, you know, after my childhood and things I did. And we were coming up too in Texas since we were a small town. We had a thing called NYSP, the National Youth Sports Program, and everybody in our neighborhood, that was our summer, doing sports every summer. So you grow with it, you know. But everything Houston for me, when I moved to New York, I started to support the Knicks and the Yankees, but not the Mets, but the Yankees. But I'm diehard Houston everything, you know. So
well, you might be having one of your Houston guys come up to your area, because all the rumors are swirling that Harden might leave the Rockets and he wants to go to the Nets. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that today. You know, Brooklyn's pulling them in. I mean, with KD still there and getting a year off to not play to get his injury really on point, because that's a very sensitive injury that you could re-injure. So he was smart to sit the whole season out.
Yeah, I think so too. It's got to be crazy because those, like Harden, they were like, we'll give you $50 million a year. And he's like, nah. Thinking about other teams. You're like, what?
Harden, it's crazy because Harden is Houston to us.
Yeah.
You know, he comes from OKC. He is Houston to us. You know, just like Carmelo after playing with the Nuggets and even OKC and Portland, he's still a Knick to us, you know.
Right.
Like certain players will get that stamp
as
forever. And but the Texans is my team now, but I didn't grow up on an expansion team, so it's a little weird.
It is weird. But I get that.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're having a rough season, man.
Yeah. My brother-in-law's brother played for the Packers back when Favre played.
Oh, really?
When they won the ring. Yeah. So salute to my brother-in-law's brother. So what is a brother-in-law's brother?
Brother-in-law's brother. Oh, yeah.
He's my brother-in-law's brother.
Yeah, that's what he is.
Yes. He's with the 49ers now. He's a linebacker coach, but he played linebacker. Johnny Holland, he played for the Packers back when they won Super Bowl with Favre, so he got a ring.
Oh, nice. Got a ring. Well, you can't ask for more than that, man. That's dope.
Yeah, and actually, was Kubiak there when he was there? But he was with the Texans, and he was with the Lions, and he just moved around and around, but now he's with the 49ers. They even went to Super Bowl last year, and he was there, and my sister went. Obviously my sister's married to his brother and they all got to go and they go to Super Bowl last year, even though they lost, but still that's just to get there.
It's a huge thing. It's a huge thing to get there.
Who's your team?
I mean, I have some sadness too, cause I was born in Cincinnati and when I left Cincinnati, we left when I was in 88 and they went to the Super Bowl. That's that famous, Super Bowl where, Montana hit Taylor in the end zone on that drive. So, and then the Cincinnati Bengals were like, we're going to be dog shit for 20 years. So it was just one of those things where, like, you know, I get excited when they have a decent season every now and then, but just as a franchise, they're fucking terrible. And then we moved a lot, and my dad's a big college football fan. So as a kid, I was.
So your quarterback, then, but you're having your quarterback from LSU there. I mean,
Burrow's. Yeah. I mean, he's dope. He's the real talent, man. He's the real deal.
Yeah, he is.
But we moved around and we watched. I mean, college was like the big thing in my house. So when we ended up moving to Florida, I was already kind of an FSU fan, but it just made it even. I was became more of a fan, and that was like during the 90s. So every year was like Christmas, you know, they just kicked shit out of everybody. And then now they are fucking terrible, which is
crazy.
It's wild to see. I mean, sports, especially like big time college ball, it's cyclical, you know, they'll have like their up years and down years, but right now they're in a real, real drought, man.
Yeah. Especially when, what's his name there who just got thrown from team to team and they start playing baseball.
Are you talking about Tebow?
Yeah, Tebow.
Yeah, he was at Florida though. He was at Florida. I'm talking.
You said FSU. Yeah, FSU. I'm thinking about the Gators. Yeah. Think about the Gators. My fault. I'm seeing Gators, but FSU. My bad.
Yeah, so I was a big Seminole guy. Yeah. No, but Tebow. It's funny. I met Tebow in a restaurant out here, and one of my friends was like, "Oh, he's a comedian," and he's like, "Oh, what kind of comedy do you do?" I go, "Shit, you wouldn't like." And he was like,
yeah, because he's on some Christian shit.
Yeah, he's on some Christian shit. And that's what I said.
I'm a Christian, too.
I mean,
I went to Catholic church, but I still talk filth.
Yeah, dude, the same. I was raised very Catholic, and I am absolutely disgusting what comes out of my mouth. And that's what I told him. And he just laughed, and he was like, no, I'd like it. And I was like, no, you wouldn't. But he was a super nice guy, so I got to say that.
Shout to FSU, man. You know, hopefully they'll get better.
Hopefully they get better, man. Prayers up to FSU.
Prayers up.
Yeah, man. This was a real pleasure, dude. I can't thank you, and hopefully we can do it again sometime, man.
Anytime, man. You got my number.
All right. Take care, brother.
Much love to you, Tom. All right. Salute.
Hello. I am Miles Pardo, and I'm going to teach you all you need to know about your walls. All you need to know about Trevin. Your walls. All you need to know about Trevin. Your balls. All you need to know about Trevin. Your balls. All you need to know about Trevin. Your balls. All you need to know about Trevin. Your balls. All you need to know about Trevin. Your balls.